coming for more, man. Lots of talking, but never ever gets boring. Rounding up the humorous stuff in the news about Mormons. Can't wait to see which one will they choose. This week in Mormons, you get a chosen Smith style. With more and E upon the host, G up and I. Al's the big bearded guy from Missouri. D.O.F. is the bearded nationalist from D.C. This week, you get the funny stuff, the fun things. Like what casserole will be made for General Gumfrey. Or what we're from happened in Raw, Idaho. From getting back to Mitt Romney, things like that, you know. You get the pro Mormon dudes bringing more Mormon news. Bleeding the eyes of God and Latter-day Saints too. Go get the info you need, I'm sure you really would like. So catch them on air when they're that night on the fight. This Mormon week is in Mormon day. Everything's about Mormon. This week in Mormon.
Howdy ho, everybody. Welcome to This Week in Mormons. Yeah.
Dude, we're due for a new jingle, I feel like. That should have been my gift for the 400th episode.
Right? Well, it's not too late if you can get somebody on Fiverr to turn it around, like do a special, you know, 20-minute turnaround. We're in. It's going to happen.
That wouldn't cost me more than $5. That's a $20 Fiverr at that point.
That gets serious at that point. But for all your other needs, everybody, if you wonder where we get all these horrific and terrific songs, just over on Fiverr. That's why you can listen to Mormon This, Mormon That, featuring Dat Boy. You can listen to the whole song on Spotify, everybody. If you search for us on Spotify, you'll find both the podcast and a musical artist.
Have you ever got a penny off of that? Has Spotify ever paid you the money you deserve?
I don't think we have that many
streams
of it.
For the song that I commissioned and paid for?
I don't think so. I haven't looked at the stats in a while. I do get money from my old band, the famous 2 years later. I do get some of that.
How much money you made off that?
Not crazy. I mean, I've more than made back what it costs to publish the album digitally through channels. Like we used CD Baby.
You know, really? You got like $50 out of it?
Yeah. So in most cases now, I'm sure it's gone up. It's been a couple of years since we did all that. You can digitally publish through services like CD Baby to all the outlets, you know, not just Spotify, that just send it to everybody. It's about $40 for a whole album if you're going to do it as an artist. So
wow.
Yeah, so we have two albums on there for 2 years later. We've definitely paid them off as an investment, and now it's just pure profit,
Lindsay,
man. So every now and then when I get $30 dropped in my bank account, and I call up my old bandmates and say, $6 for you, and $6 for you, and $6 for you, and I'm lying. I
just
hoard it all and keep
all
it to myself.
Just send them all a Little Caesar's pizza.
Maybe. Hot and Ready isn't what it used to be.
Fair.
It's just not.
How
but
are
anyway,
you, Jeff?
We digress.
Good to see you. I feel like it's been a week. We're doing these like a normal podcast again.
It's been 2 weeks, Al. Don't worry. I'm not going to make you talk to me for consecutive weeks. That would be beneath
and
you,
quite see
frankly.
That you don't.
I shan't. No, last week the Twin Sisters were on doing their thing, but it was 2 weeks ago that you and I did our little general conference recap and
those
blazed
some
all that.
Of my
we
best times we're recapping general conference.
This week, however, will be more of a traditional This Week in Mormons format. Though it is our 400th episode, which is pretty rad. We'll see. We don't have anything special planned. What? Like McKay Coppins isn't here.
We should have done a musical of like, what does 400 episodes look like? It looks like two marriages, three kids, some wives and a thing.
Well, we probably should have called up our old buddy Peter Breinholt. You know, I'm sure he already did his little South American sabbatical. Peter could have done something for us.
Remember, we interviewed Peter Breinholt live on this podcast and broadcasted delayed, not live. But that is amazing. That childhood idol.
One of my favorite things about doing that episode was, one, it went really long. It was like an hour and a half episode, but it was still fun. But kind of by the end, like I feel like we got past the initial burst of excitement and asking some of the questions we talked about and typical interview stuff. And then it sort of got a little more real. It was more like we were just three guys just kind of talking about life and just like we're just chilling with Peter Breinholt. It felt like when a party dies down, there's a couple of you left and you start having more like sincere discussions about things. And then it just, I don't know. I feel
like
we even got
so you guys
strong.
Hate me?
That was a good time. I don't know which episode number that is, 300 something, Find it, people. Peter Breinholt. He was very, very nice to come on with us. He's a great dude.
Not our highest downloaded episode by any means.
Our highest downloaded episode. Is episode number 259 from January of 2015 called I Swear I Was Just Making Soap.
And that was the guy that got turned in from his roommates at BYU for making meth or something, right?
Yeah, he was making meth in his bedroom. And he said, I was just making soap. Soap.
Those are our funniest times, man. We really drove the downloads back in the day.
I believe the main reason for the downloads was the fact that gay marriage was about to become legal, and John DeLynn was, his excommunication was also pending. There was a lot going on back then. It was.
I remember it all wild. Very well looking back. The summer I turned 16.
How are
Jeff,
you,
Jeff? How's DC? Are you doing well?
Yeah. You know, not a lot has changed since I spoke with you 2 weeks ago.
Has the Kavanaugh aftermath died down? Are there still protesting going on out there? Is it mayhem in the city?
Not that I'm aware of, but, you know, I don't go downtown anymore. I changed jobs. I do miss this. I miss working in downtown D.C. It's a little more lively. Now that I'm working on a base, it's a little bit removed.
You're in Baltimore now.
No, I hope not.
That's fair.
As far as I can tell, it has. Interesting bit of D.C. trivia, though. Allegedly, the Park Service, quote-unquote, which manages Pennsylvania Avenue. If you go to the White House, the actual pedestrianized stretch of Pennsylvania Avenue on the north side of the building right there, that used to drive on that before 9/11.
Yes, the mall. Off.
No, that's the mall. I'm talking the White House. You can walk along that stretch where everyone takes pictures, the closest spot to the building itself.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
You know? Allegedly, they want to close that down for security reasons, so everyone would have to just, I assume, have a new fence up against, like, Lafayette Square. It's a bad idea, man. That's a big pedestrian area. It's a big free speech zone. There's always somebody protesting something there. It would bum me out. I don't think that's a good move. I don't think that's going to help stop people from hopping fences, Secret Service. That's all. That's all
yeah.
I have to say.
Looking at you, Service.
About that. Otherwise, D.C. continues to be D.C. I went to Chuck E. Cheese the other night for the first time in probably 30 years.
Dude, did your kids love that? I feel like Guy is of age that he would eat that up.
Yeah, he was having a good time. So it's our realtor once a year just invites all of his clients, which is like half my ward apparently, based on it was basically a family home evening. And he just like, he buys a bunch of pizzas. Now Chuck E. Cheese does a cool thing. When we were children, Al, of course, you know, you bought tokens, right? You'd put your dollar bill into the machine.
Yes. Tokens.
They don't do that. Now what you do is you pay a flat fee, and it's not even a certain credited amount that you get. It's just that you get like an hour's worth of play on anything, which is kind of nice. So he just gave us a bunch of cards. Like the first time you use it, it turns it on. Then you have an hour, and you can just use whatever you want. So... That was fun.
Brilliant.
Guy had a good time. Chuck E. Cheese pizza, actually, not too bad. I was surprised. And the real downside, though, is that they are moving away. If you've ever been to a Chuck E. Cheese, listeners, the terrifying robot band.
Animatronic. Yeah.
Yeah. They've done away with it. Now Chuck comes out and hosts a dance party with the kids. And then at the end, he throws tickets, like the tickets you get from playing the games. He throws tickets in the air. It's like beads at Mardi Gras, but with children. Just tickets everywhere. Just throws them, and it's pandemonium. Kids are crawling on the floor.
Wait, is it an animatronic Chuck Cheese?
No, this is a person in a suit. The animatronics are gone. All gone.
Oh boy.
Which admittedly saddens me, because that was about the most 80s thing you could ever experience.
There's a great stand-up routine that talks about how this guy hates calling it, or like he just doesn't believe in saying the middle initial of a name, and he does a good 5 minutes on just calling it Chuck Cheese. It makes me really happy.
I think a lot of people don't even realize it is Chuck E. Cheese's possessive. Huh. I think most people just call it
sure
Chuck
it
E. Cheese.
Is.
Anyway, yeah, I think there are a few things that talk about my my downward spiral into suburban hell than the fact that I went to Chuck E. Cheese is on Monday.
I've given up on life. I spent my evening at Chuck E. Cheese and I didn't hate it.
I actually had a good time, but every now and then I'll be like, this is what I did for entertainment. This is my life now. This is what happens when you have kids.
I can't wait till I'm trying to explain to my children. When I was your age, we would go in this ball pit and smell like it for the rest of the night, and we loved it.
They don't have ball pits anymore either, which is very sad. It's just video games and pizza. That's all they got. And sheet cake.
Terrible.
Whatever. What's going on with you?
The normal. I had a bit of travel I was doing. I was hopping around cities for a little bit. And then, came home. Me and my wife went apple picking with our child. It's weird to do things with a kid who's like 6 months old. Because I feel like, I don't know, you want to go and do family things. The outings are important, but you know this child doesn't care. And you're That's like, true. Should we have just left him with some family member to care for? But you still got to take him out and do things. I'm so conflicted always.
I agree. It's a weird stage. He doesn't remember it. He'll never remember it. And he can't even really react to what you're doing. He might grin if you wave an apple in front of his face or something, but...
Yeah. No, for sure.
And he's useless. He
didn't even carry them well. I had to carry him while picking apples.
It's not a many hands makes light work situation. He's basically just dead weight.
I thought I could put him on the ground. He'd go fetch the apples. He did nothing.
Apple picking can be fun.
Laid there and cooed.
Have you ever done strawberry picking at a farm or anything like that when they let you take your own?
I used to do that in California as a preteen without the farmers knowing.
Okay, it was quite okay, the scandal. Mr. Steinbeck. I know you had this whole thing in the valley with, you know, Tim Shell and all that. But anyway, I've done it before. That is like backbreaking labor. You want to talk about empathy for the migrant workers of America? Go pick strawberries for a morning.
Why don't they do lettuce? You pick lettuce or you pick asparagus.
It's terrible. I mean,
let you go out there.
You do it for 30 minutes and then all you want to do is sit back in your shiatsu chair. Because you're like, seriously, people do this for 8 hours a day just to get bread on the table? Everyone should have to do it so that we could have more empathy towards...
My older brother tried to work on a lettuce picking crew when he was in high school, and he made it a day. And was like, nope, I'm going to Burger King. Gonna flip them burgers.
Yep. That's all you got, man. It's not worth it. Sometimes I forget you grew up briefly in Salinas. You're technically a Californian.
What do you mean briefly?
I mean, how old?
A third of my life.
You were like 10 when you moved?
13 years. A man.
Wow, straight up teenage. So you're basically a Californian. I mean, you claim Missouri.
You lived in California 10 years longer than I did.
That's true, which gives me more street cred.
That's true.
You know what happens when I walk around the streets of LA, and you were from Salinas. There's not as much there.
You walk the streets of Placentia.
You know, you just walk around. You try to avoid the gang warfare. You really learn things at that age.
By the Golden Spoon Yogurtini shop.
You ask yourself, why are there so many donut shops in this area? Which you don't realize until I read something how Los Angeles actually has the most donut shops per capita in the country. You'd think it would be in New York or somewhere like that, but there are donut stores everywhere in LA. All over the place.
Why?
I don't know. It's just, who knows? After I read that and thought about it, I was like, you know what? There actually is a great preponderance of donut stores all over the place.
Hold on. You agreed with data fed reporting? That seems odd.
I know. I was kind of rolling the dice on that one. I didn't know if it was fake news.
You said, wait a minute.
What you folks don't know about me is I've been crusading against fake news long before it was en vogue. All right. I've been going after the mainstream media for
years.
Jeff
was the original down with journalism.
Yeah. The enemy of the people, as we know. The absolute enemy of the people. Which, speaking of today, did you see all that CNN stuff? That was exciting in a bad way.
No, what happened? I missed it.
So suspicious packages arrived at the Obamas, the Clintons, and CNN's headquarters. That's all we know at this point. Go on. But they had to evacuate the Time Warner Center in New York as they removed the suspicious package from it. We don't know what's going on. President Trump, you know, spoke, ironically somewhat, spoke out against saying, you know, political violence is completely inappropriate and we won't stand for it, which is funny because less than a week ago he was in Montana praising the congressman who got convicted of assault against a reporter and saying it was a good thing. But hey, whatever.
And Khashoggi was cut up and murdered by the Saudi government and he that was whole thing. Fine with it.
I don't know where he is on that one. That whole thing is
madness.
It's a complete.
Anyway, how about Mormons? Have you've been around Mormons for a while?
I believe you are referring to Latter-day Saints or members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Yes.
This week in.
I'm not familiar. If you're asking if I'm a member Mormons. Of the Church of Jesus Christ, if you're asking if I have a testimony of the restored gospel, why? Yes, I do. That's what I do now at work when people ask me what religion I am.
Does not compute if you're wondering if I am a child of God. I used am. To
say, people Thank be like, are, they say, are you a Mormon? I say, actually. And then I just, the whole thing flows right out. We've had at least 17 baptisms since then.
Mostly you respond as a young John Lovitz. And I like that.
From The Critic. One of the best shows I loved so much as a kid. You ever watch
From
that?
The Critic? You watched that?
Remember the show The Critic? Yeah, it was awful, and yet I found it so entertaining.
I knew it was on. I had never once watched an episode.
I was big on The Simpsons. It was at that phase in my life. That character even...
I feel like you would have watched Frasier as a 10-year-old. Is this true?
Not really. I didn't really watch Frasier as a kid. I mean...
It just seems like your pretentious humor.
For one thing, as a 10-year-old, Frasier wasn't even on yet, so there's that. But I know I came to appreciate Frasier later on in life. It was not something I care much about. My mother loved watching it, though. Oh, let me tell you.
The worst.
So anyway, in the world of Latter-day Saints, all sorts of things are happening, folks. Well, the one thing I'm going to tell you that you should know already, but just in case you were wondering, the first presidency is very old.
What? How old are they, Jeff?
There we go. So it turns out it is now the oldest first presidency in church history. This is because one Peggy Fletcher Stack, you might have heard of her, the old PFS, talked to statistician Christian Anderson, who said that now their average age is like 88.6, which is the oldest.
I'm sorry, did it take a statistician to do... basic averages.
I do find this funny because I like that. Yeah, I was thinking the same thing. Like, this had to be an interview and this has to be according to statistician. I don't think you have to have according to anyone. This is just fact. Just plug in the dates and what you do is you get an Excel sheet, you run the average function, and you just plug in a bunch of ages from every first presidency and see what you get. And then sort by size. So, but they are the oldest one now.
You've never determined an average in your life.
I've done lots of Excel things. I know how to do if statements in Excel. Leave me alone. So, but for context, Joseph Smith was 26.3 years old when he organized the first presidency with Jesse Gaws, who did not last long, and Sidney Rigdon, who were 46 and 39, respectively. Anyways, it stayed young for a while, and it wasn't until Brigham Young entered the Salt Lake Valley and was... understandably president of the church for a very long time, that the age of the first presidency continued to stretch out. And then we couple that with the fact that people just live longer today, and you understandably have an older first presidency, considering President Nelson is 94.
Speaking of 94-year-old President Nelson, you might have talked about this last week. Did you talk about how, was it Inc. magazine wrote about... the innovation inside of the new leadership of the church?
Go on.
No, well, they wrote an article about, like, if you want a good example of innovation, look at the
I've seen this.
President Nelson.
I went through it, but I think you might speak more fluently than I will. Tell me more. What was the thesis?
Just talking about how he, like, the moves that he's making are trying to rejuvenate a church that statistically is stagnating, or, you know, like It was just kind of an interesting, it's an interesting read of, you know, the oldest prophet we've had in a long time is like making some of the boldest moves. And I was like, yes, that's true. He is. Well done.
He really has been, if you could rank, if we somehow weighted and assigned a value to like consequentialness of a presidency.
Oh, 27 this far, for sure. 27, 28.
I mean, President Nelson will be doing pretty well. He's only even been in for 10 months. And they have just been... not. Now, I don't think all this came about just out of nowhere. I imagine all these big changes we've been seeing have been in the works for a very long time. And for whatever reason, though, of course, the Lord held off on giving the green light to go forth and do it until this time, and that's fine. But, these aren't willy-nilly
things. I think a lot of it, like, President Monson probably didn't have... the wherewithal to tackle some of this in his later years.
No, not at all.
And so it makes sense. I mean, you kind of have to wait for the energy and enthusiasm to be there. I mean, it's why President Hinckley's sort of time as a prophet was so fun to watch, because he was just so active his whole life.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I mean. You know, this has been in the works. I'm sure they studied it out for some time, but now you have leadership that's got the wherewithal to see it through. I mean, look at him now. He's been down in South America. He's in South America right now. Still, he's just touring around, saying hi to people, speaking to the saints in Peru in Spanish, just dropping it like it's no big deal.
Does he speak Spanish?
Yeah, he speaks a handful of languages, and one of the things I love about this, like, I think you've heard the story. Have you heard the story about him learning Chinese? Or Mandarin? He speaks Mandarin as well. I'm going to butcher this, and I'm sure our listeners will rake me over the coals for it. But essentially, he had some exposure working with... he worked with the Chinese many times over history, and he basically felt inspired to learn the language because it was going to be important as time went on. And so he just, being Russell M. Nelson, just said, I will learn Mandarin, and then just set himself to task... learned Mandarin, wound up going to China to help teach their doctors and do things. And now, of course, he has this in his back pocket and he can still speak it. And the church has unofficial relations. I mean, the Chinese government's aware of us, but of course, it's a bit different there politically. But President Nelson's an interesting guy. He's the kind who just pretty much says, I think I need to learn Spanish. So he just goes and learns Spanish and rocks it hard. I think he speaks five languages, if I'm not mistaken.
So interesting, man. Like, I almost wouldn't even claim my mission language is one that I can speak still, where it's like, I could probably stumble through some stuff and get back into it if I wanted to, but is it just in my back pocket ready to go? No, it's not. No, it's not.
Dude, and how depressing is that? I mean, Spanish is all around me, but I cannot speak it like I did on my mission. It's very sad. I mean, you have a bit of an excuse, because it's not like you're bumping into Ukrainians right and left in your day-to-day life.
And if I do,
life.
They speak Russian?
Yeah, you know. But yeah, that I think about that sometimes, how I wish I still had my mission level of fluency. I will say, in my defense, every now and then when I hear actual Spaniards talking, I understand it so much more easily than I do if I hear from some Latin American country, which is just kind of funny. I don't think that stuff's going to matter a lot. But if I hear Spaniards talking, I understand it all immediately. Anyway, good job.
Just slap him on the back of the neck and say, you're good boys. You're good boys.
Now, let me ask you this. Now, when I was watching General Conference, it seemed as if President Nelson and President Oakes kind of pal around quite a bit. It seems like they walk together and are kind of chatty. And President Eyring...
Oh, they seem smiley, sure, yeah.
It seems like President Eyring is just sort of... Just keeping behind him a little bit. Like, now I don't know if he is either not part of their little club or if he's just getting older, and it's just he's getting older.
I would suspect that you're reading into this.
Oh, I know I am. I'm just doing this for no reason. I mean, do you remember the press conference with the new first presidency, and President Eyring looked kind of... What am I doing
sad
here the entire time? So I do think he's just getting older. But if you watch some of Conference and see the way President Oakes and Nelson just kind of spring up and are like patting each other on the back and walking out together, President Eyring's just kind of walking behind him like, all right, well, I'm still here. This is,
Wait,
still have.
You think they're planning to murder him?
Whoa! Okay,
you suppose Elder Eyring is in danger? What I'm hearing you say is you suspect there's a plot against his life.
I got a tip.
How? Blink twice if you need help. We'll come for you. We'll come for you.
What's your password if safe or under duress? Just do some boring ultimatum stuff right there. Everest!
Start our campaign of free Hal. It's a great idea.
Anyway.
Let's see. Jana Reese wrote a mediocre at best article.
You love her so much.
In defense or in praise of single Mormons. And she's saying, our whole life we've taught people that getting married is the most important decision of your life. And now that people are taking so long, she's saying they're doing what we told them to do. Quit bugging them. She says, hammering the get married message may actually be driving singles out of the church.
Stop.
Hearing over and over that they're doing life wrong and that they're possibly sinful. I just think Jana Reese, she has great stuff about stuff that I feel like she understands. She speaks very articulately at times. And then there's stuff like this where I'm just like, I don't think you have any business opening your mouth about this.
This one could be more like she needed to write a column and didn't know where to go with it. I agree.
She was a little bothered by Elder Oaks sounding an alarm about single Mormons delaying marriage and childbearing. I actually think that's a fair thing to be talking about. I mean, like, both you and I didn't get married until much later in life. Much later.
Okay,
in
not
our
much.
30s,
let's just like say a normal, later.
Like a normal person. Yeah, later.
Just one adjective.
And, I mean, it was funny because, like, I still remember around 29 years old, a buddy of mine from my mission was like, dude, don't take this the wrong way, but how are you still active? I don't know anybody else from our, like, when we were on our mission that stayed single and is still going to church every week. Like, how are you doing it? And dude, it was actually pretty poignant. I didn't have anybody else. There wasn't any of the other dudes that didn't get married. They're just gone.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, I think this speaks more to like the safety or the, you know, like I think a lot of us have this like good, righteous desire, but then the church is sort of built up around the gospel of family. And if you miss some of that track, it's hard to stay enthusiastic about the gospel, I feel like. And so, I mean, it's good to be concerned about. And even if you're not, you know, if you're single and waiting to get married, I still think it's a good thing to be conscious of and, you know, make sure that you're like keeping doubts in check where it may just be frustrations that are manifesting themselves differently and things like that. Frankly, I think my summary here is Jana Reese, you know not of what you speak, and we're in fine shape. We don't need any extra pity or praise. So thanks.
Let's also
I speak as one who was also single.
Let's not forget episode 294 of This Week in Mormons. Jana Reese, your days are numbered. That's an episode, everyone.
Yes,
we threatened her 3 years ago. Al, for the people who struggle to stay when they're not getting married yet, do you think there's like a sense of like the institution has failed them? Like, is that part of what it is? Or are you just exhausted trying to find a spouse and you just give up? And
no, I think for sure the institution has failed them. My sense was always that like nobody had any idea what to do with me once I got past 26.
I think in some ways that's still true. I think this church does struggle knowing what to do with mid singles in particular. We don't know how to.
It's kind of devastating to watch it.
And that's one thing with this article. It's in praise of singles, but I think more it should be the thesis seems more to be like in praise of those who wed later in life. I mean, I think it's good. Of course, you want to encourage people if they're frustrated because they want to be married. And our culture does push that a lot. And I could understand why one would feel inadequate if one has not gotten married by a certain age. I mean, it gets frustrating, especially for women. I mean, like it or not, the way our culture in the church or out of the church is set up, when women start getting well into their 30s, it does become oftentimes more difficult for them to get married. It's sad and shallow, but that is what happens. but yeah, I don't think we always know what to do with them. Like, there's a lot more we could do to help mid-singles feel like they have a place.
I would actually love to see, like, you know, with all the changes that are happening, I would love to hear the announcement that, like, a program was put together. They, you know, they're sort of acknowledging that there are now thousands and thousands of these people that are wondering what they're supposed to be doing in the church. If they're divorced at 35 and kids at home and not married, like, what are they supposed to be doing?
Yeah.
And some attention and sort of programs developed for them in a thoughtful way would be amazing. And honestly, I would suspect that, like, that feels like something Elder Nelson could pay attention to. And so,
President Nelson.
What did I say?
Elder. What is this, 2017? Come on, man.
I'm sorry. The Colonel. Okay, the Colonel.
Live in the now. And keep
it. Right, you get one more story.
That's it, and then we're done?
Then we're going to reminisce. No, we can do a few more. Give me your good ones. More. Give me your good
quick,
ones.
Quick one.
Pretty,
we did,
crappy story.
We did mention President Nelson has been in South America. The president of Peru actually pleaded with President Nelson to help the children of Peru, saying, essentially telling him that the church does good things. We need more of a moral compass. I think there was also a hint at needing.
Wait, was he panhandling? Was he like pulling on his coat and he was like, "For the children, sir, please, we need your money."
I think there was essentially yes. Just
come on, that's funny. All just, right, that's funny. If you've been to Peru, that's way. Funny.
But anyway, President Nelson's just there rocking the Peruvians, hanging out. You know, there's almost 600,000 members of the church in Peru. That's huge.
Wow.
As far as the typical number in a country, I mean, Mexico, the only countries with more than a million other than the U.S., I believe, are Mexico and Brazil. And then Peru and Philippines have a ton. But that's just, there are a lot of members of the church in Peru. It's very interesting. Another
that
one
is so true, Jeff.
Here's one. Shut up. Here's one that was interesting, but now it stopped being interesting. So the Tabernacle Choir at Temple Square. You got something you want to say there, Flapjack? Huh? Yeah, that's right.
No, just waiting for this wonderful punchline that's going to come.
There's not even a punchline. What happened was the tickets were going out for their Christmas concert, right? But for reasons beyond understanding, after all the hoopla of renaming the choir, all this stuff, the actual announcement, the press release with all the information about the upcoming Christmas concert says, "Christmas with the Mormon Tabernacle Choir." And it talks all about the Mormon Tabernacle Choir. This was as of this afternoon before we recorded. They have since now actually amended the error like a week later. And now it says Christmas with the Tabernacle Choir at Temple Square. But folks, if you way back
now, it's a non-story,
thing,
but Jeff is excited.
I never forgive or forget. If I'm into politics, I'm going to be digging up stuff against my opponents from decades ago for which they've already apologized. But I won't even care.
Yeah, you're going to be killer.
Anyway, it did happen. Really, it was funny at the time because it was like, okay, so they're just still calling themselves the Mormon Tabernacle Choir. What's going on here, folks? Speaking of another great episode, remember Angela who sang with Motab? That was a good one.
Yes.
That was one of my favorites. That was a good show. That was a good one to listen to.
That's a great show. It's a great show. Oh, the memories come flooding back.
What is wrong with you? Why are you looking at me with those beady little eyes like something's happening? What do you think?
I feel like we've got just enough lag that, like, as I wait for your answer, it becomes even more funny because you say, "Remember Angela?" And I say, "Yes." And then it's a long, dramatic pause, and you say, "That was a good time. That episode was delightful." Couple of quick mentions. We wrote an article that says, "Does a mission define you as a Latter-day Saint?" The answer is no.
Explain what you're
saying.
There
are open house tickets for Rome available, and a Mormon pioneer grave was marked by a wagon wheel. This Mormon pioneer is from England. Read any of those articles and more at thisweekinmormons.com.
You don't want to talk about any of these?
None of them were interesting.
Don't insult our writers.
Which ones? What was interesting to you? Please, please.
I appreciated the one about a mission defining you as a Latter-day Saint. It was written by Jeff Borders.
Should I have said spoiler alert? Spoiler alert. No, it doesn't define
That's
you.
Fair. It doesn't, but he had a good point. If you read the article, you'd see that he said his wife was a church, and a high councilman described returned missionaries as the heroes of the church. And his wife, and he is a convert and did not go on a mission. And his wife took a lot of offense to this. And he was nonplussed, but he said, I get it. Like, why do we use language like that? Why do we inadvertently make people who choose not to serve or who might come home early, why do we sometimes make them feel as less or make those who do serve, make them feel like more? So I thought it was a worthwhile exploration of that idea. It's a good thing to remember.
Okay, okay.
Words matter.
We can spin on this for a moment. Is there... Because I feel like a lot of it is not necessarily making those who didn't serve feel like less, but rather the idea, like the taboo of giving accolades to those who did. Is there not space for recognizing, like, it's a legit sacrifice, and
it
there's
is.
Time and commitment and effort. Is there no room in our society today where we can say, kudos to you, my man. You hero.
I don't think anyone should be congratulated at all for serving a mission. Good job.
Yeah,
you did what was
point.
Asked of you as every worthy young man. Great job fulfilling the mandate. You did nothing above and beyond. You
by
just
that
fulfilled
logic,
a requirement.
By that logic, we should then look down a long nose to those who didn't. Jeff, you ever think about that?
Two... Point and counterpoint. That's fair.
Join us next week as we discuss other lively topics like...
Now you're making me rethink my entire argument on this one. Anyway, it's a fair thing to ponder, though. You know, I mean, just don't make people who don't go feel like something is amiss in their life or they're not whole or what have you. We
yeah,
do it.
And don't make people who did go feel like they did a good job. Jeff, your left-wing leaning notions have foiled your attempts yet again to be a normal, comprehensive
look,
argument.
I just want a few things in life. I want the government to redistribute all the wealth, okay? I want everyone to be forced to watch Game of Thrones, but only the sex scenes, and I want to make sure that we do not congratulate returned missionaries. These are my three goals.
What are we in Austin, Texas? No, Jeff. No to all of them.
Austin, where you can't even drink the water.
Ugh, gross.
Mess up. Well, anyways, it was
fine. I've left you with only one story to read. Show me.
So, let's talk about one Willard Mitt Romney, who is virtually assured of winning the Senate here in a couple of weeks for Utah. Really excited to see how much he will... what kind of a chameleon he will become this time around, because he's very good at that. You know, Mitt knows. Just does what he wants. Anywho, this came about via the Facebook, got passed around, some screenshots from Twitter. So, a reporter for the Herald Extra, Katie England, wrote, "It has been a question for months now in the Herald Extra newsroom as to whether Mitt Romney has ever seen the New Girl, the show New Girl, the New Girl episode in which Schmidt pretends to be Tug Romney." And now we have an answer. Now, have you ever seen this episode, Al? Did you watch all of New Girl, or did you give up? I don't remember.
I watched a lot of New Girl since I got married. I don't remember a Mitt Romney episode.
It's in a bit later seasons. Essentially, I forget how it comes about, but Schmidt, who's a great character, lies to some girls to impress them and says that his name is Tug Romney. And I'm sure this was actually filmed back in 2012 or 13 when it was a little more topical. Anyway, there's a whole episode about that. He's pretending to be a Romney son. So she says, Romney's sons apparently recommended the show to him and his wife a while back. So, trusting their son's judgment, they decided to try out this new show. Unfortunately, they got the name slightly wrong and watched an episode of Girls instead. Now,
HBO Girls.
HBO's Girls, the show full of more adult material, we shall say. And so I love the quote right here from Mitt Romney. And she says, this is an exact quote. "We were like, holy moly," about his reaction to watching an episode of Girls instead of New Girl. So that's the classic story as to why Mitt Romney has never seen the classic Tug episode of New Girl. I just want to see Mitt Romney being like any other poor parent who's like, oh, my kids love this show. I should check it out. And then covering their eyes, wondering what on earth. I just love the whole, a little intense. Oh, don't you know?
Oh, sweet, sweet Mitt and Anne.
Okay, Al, you wanted to reminisce. Please reminisce. Go ahead. Reminisce.
Jeff, remember the old days when we would record and I would be in. So this whole podcast started about the same time I started my first company, and I would record in the back room after I had finished my work for the day. Before the morning, we record late, man. We'd keep you up. I'd send you to like 1 or 2 in the morning sometimes.
I was unemployed for a stretch there, so it worked out. It was okay for the time,
dude. But still, and then when you were in Scotland, we'd also record, and the time difference
Al, we started the podcast after I was done with grad school.
We never recorded this while you were in.
We started talking about it a little bit when I was finishing up there. But no, we didn't hit the ground running until...
Would we just call and chit-chat?
Yeah, we'd actually...
Are you sure?
I'm pretty sure. We'd be friends. We did work on that 67 Days in Orlando contest when I was in Scotland, though, if you remember that.
No, all that happened while we were doing this. That's true. We may have been doing that.
Nope. First episode of Twim...
This started in 2008.
No, we started Twim in January of 2010.
Oh.
Remember, we took a trip to the... Long-time listeners have heard this before. You and I road trip to the Bay Area. We went and saw Leo Laporte on the Twit Network and sat in the cottage, hung out, did the whole thing.
Yes.
That was all right around then. It was like that was in early January. Maybe it was later December right then.
Ah, our delightful. Here we are 8 years later.
Our very first episode was called... The 30-Foot Temple. Episode 1, published February 8th, 2010. I'm looking at it right now. All it says is, we discuss the Mormon Battalion Center.
we're so formal in the beginning.
Technology in the church.
We had sections. We were like, and now we'll move to ideas and themes. Jeff, what's your idea?
Well, we used to be a little more... I don't know if this is a good thing or a bad thing. We used to be a little more structured. We always go over content beforehand just to kind of make sure we know what's up. But we used to like assign. We'd write
this
out.
This started. We didn't always do this. This started when we had a show about the Mormon trek. And it was actually like
I forgot about this.
Bridge had fallen in.
No, it was.
And I just read the headline and was trying to like discuss how tragic it was that somebody had died. I was thinking, like, it's just the bridge in Iowa.
Yeah, it was on Mormon
Trek. Like, all right, never again.
Yeah, it was on like Mormon Trek Boulevard in Council Bluffs, Iowa. There was a bridge issue. And Al does this whole bit thinking there's been some tragedy on the trek. And at the very end,
let me run the whole thing. Well,
I hadn't read it. So I think I was reading through the article while you were just going off on all this. And you clearly had never read it. You just saw a headline and just ran with it. And so from then on out, we started organizing a bit more. Said, I'll do this, you do this, I do this, you'll do this. We'll trade off. We used Google Wave for any longtime techies. That was a delight. And then
we used Google Wave for its entire lifetime, from when it started to when it died. That was just a blip in the Twim universe.
That was pretty funny. And then after time went on, for some reason, we just started throwing our stories up on Trello, and then we just kind of just go. We talk about them in advance, but here is what I will lead off with.
What has changed for you in 400 episodes, Jeff? Is the church different than you remember when you started?
Yeah, it actually is. I think the show and I think the process of also like, you know, blogging and stuff that we've done and interacting with our community has opened me up a lot more to a lot of different trains of thought and needs and all sorts of things around the Latter-day Saint community that I wasn't exposed to before. I think I thought I was back then. But I look back on the stuff we'd talk about in some of the early episodes, and even I like to think I've had an open-minded view all my life, but the way I see those things now, while I still see them through the lens of someone who's active in the faith and believes in that and supports it, I definitely think I've dipped my toes a lot more into many other things, primarily because of the show. I don't know if I would have wound up doing that if it weren't for what we've been doing.
Yeah.
And so I think it's made me a stronger person overall.
Yeah, I could definitely see that. I think, yeah, my experience with it has been like it's forced me. It's like one of the things I've loved about this show is it forced me to sort of reason through articles, ideas, criticisms, thoughts that it would have been much easier to just sort of brush past back in the day, right? Like if you just kind of ignore it, you don't have to deal with it. And for us, I mean, we'd pull some of these in and have to chew on them a little bit and try and understand how either our church could issue a response like this or, you know, why people would be critical of that. And it really did. I mean, it gave me a much more empathetic heart, I feel like, over the course of this show. Honestly, it's also like I feel like it strengthened my testimony quite a bit in just like having these conversations with you, particularly again and again and again, as we would continue to approach things with a faithful sort of sympathetic ear, and oftentimes, I mean, discover different depths to our testimony that we didn't necessarily realize before. It's actually, I mean, for me, I credit this, you know, that story I told earlier, the guy that was like, how are you still active in the church, even with being single and stuff? I give a lot of the credit to you and I and our ability to like continue to deal with difficult issues as we like stayed positive and talked about stuff.
Yeah, it's kind of funny the way that feeds off itself, right? Like, I think there are a lot of areas I would not have even touched on were it not for the podcast and the stuff I wouldn't have even thought about or been aware of, things that could rock the boat a little bit. But then at the same time, because we do this, I think it's helped me navigate my way through those things. So it's things I wouldn't have had to navigate without the podcast. But because of the podcast, I've been able to navigate it and get out on the other side, I guess. It's kind of funny that way. But I'd rather navigate it and know
it's
better.
It's made me really...
Then, you know, be, I don't want to say ignorant. No one's ignorant, but, you know, not be aware of certain sides.
Well, it's funny. It's funny. I remember how excited we got when like the church started issuing essays on blacks in the priesthood and Joseph Smith.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, they start to sort of address some of the historical issues that have plagued the church for a while. And we're always there. I mean, they're always there to find, but to have the church start like addressing them was so meaningful to us. And like, as we got to teach our different classes in gospel doctrine and gospel principles and things, I just can't imagine that without this show that same excitement and enthusiasm and like gratitude would have been there for something like the church essays or something like that. Right. And like, it really kind of put us in a mode where, our ability to teach and our ability to testify, like we got I feel like I got more out of my gospel experience over these last several years being able to have this as an instrument.
Yeah. And likewise, I'm like Sunday School Bonanza. I think that was your idea in the first place. You're the ideas man.
Yeah.
You know, our now moribund gospel doctrine focused podcast, which I think I might have to resurrect now that Come Follow Me is out and we actually have new curriculum to deal with. We'll probably have to visit that coming into the new year. But one other thing that I find interesting is when we started this show, there was kind of a dearth of LDS podcasts. I'm just basically thinking about how much the market has exploded in the time since. I mean, they existed. There were a few out there. But a lot of the shows, they had some very straightforward church-produced podcasts. They're what you would expect. The church had not really figured out new media super well at this time. We've come a huge way. I mean, I've had nothing to do with that, but they've done leaps and bounds. They're doing crazy great stuff now. And the other side of it might have been, you know, the more critical side, we'll say, of LDS related podcasts. And our whole goal was to kind of jump in the middle and say, look, we're just normal guys. We're going to talk about stuff, but we're still like, we're active in the church. We're just not going to be very dry and we're not going to be anti. We're just here. But now it's amazing to me I don't feel like any of these are like my grandchildren of podcasts or anything like that. But man, the marketplace is so much more crowded. Like, you're on social media now, and there's so many LDS related outlets and a number of great, really, really useful podcasts that you can listen to. I mean, and we've had the privilege of associating with a number of those people, whether you've got, you know, Kurt Frankum over at Leading Saints, which got renamed, by the way. Leading LDS is now Leading Saints, who's always been had our back, and a number of other podcasts. And there's so many people doing really cool stuff now. And it's interesting to see. It's huge now how much we've grown, how much we're embracing those. All those various.
We kind of got to be one of the, we're one of the grandfathers of the space here.
I don't think people respect us like that, but we are. We are the grandfathers saying, "You ungrateful little brats, why don't you love me?"
We were first into the Twitter stake.
Well, we weren't first.
That about.
We weren't first, but we
were. Well, we weren't the first to tweet it, but we were there in the first one, absolutely.
Yeah, we were there. I remember actually way back when. I remember it was 2011. I was visiting you in New York, right? And it was General Conference weekend when I spent a week up there hanging out with you. And we were sitting around watching General Conference, and I remember that's when we like cracked open our laptops and we're sitting there just rocking Twitter, doing the Twitter stake thing. I think that was the first time we got serious about the Twitter stake. That was funny.
We were visionaries. We were visionary people.
And we sunk.
Jeff, it's been a great run, man. I'm particularly grateful to you and our friendship that has developed and evolved over the years with this. It's a good 400, man.
Yeah, we're doing well. Another funny thing I just thought about looking at some of these old episodes, they're all posted by you. And one thing I'm grateful for is while I'm technically proficient, like I'm good at learning stuff, when we started the show, I did the audio engineering. I still do the audio engineering, right? But the technical side of it, like starting a podcast, getting it submitted to iTunes, doing all that stuff, that was all Al. Like building out a website, knowing how to do any of that stuff, I'm just like, you are the god of this one, Al. Make it rain. Make it happen, buddy. I mean, I remember early episodes when I'd finish the show, I'd have to send it back to you, and then I'd be like, okay, buddy, you going to post it? Post it. Do what you got to do. And then, but as time's gone on, you know, you show. It's just funny thinking about
it. To your credit, you've learned. I even make you do code now. You've like customized our whole website.
I've learned a lot of, stuff along those lines strictly from this show. It has actually aided me in my professional life, funny enough. It's given me a lot of
also maybe my favorite memory would be Kevin Beckstrom and his cease and desist letter for all the we kept trying to give him love, and that guy just could not figure it out.
I love the Zarahemla Times. In fact, I wonder if it's still this is coming full circle, because in the early episodes I would be like, all right, let's read the Zarahemla Times, and you'd say no, and then I'd go do it anyway. He has not updated the Times since June.
Oh,
that,
boy.
That's a bit sad for me. They say that talking to plants helps them to grow, so I'm reading them some scriptures. Pluck off the branches that have not brought forth good fruit and cast them into the fire. I thought it might give them a little extra incentive. I love you, Kevin Beckstrom. You and McKay Coppins have made my world everything it should be. And McKay, we know you're out there, man. I want McKay on the show, Al.
Have you asked him?
Not directly. I'm well acquainted with some of his closer associates, but it's never happened. He's hit the big time. Deseret News ran a profile on him a few weeks ago. The secret's out.
He writes for the Atlantic. When we first got him.
Secret's out on that, McKay Coppins. He was a nobody. Actually,
he was a Zarahemla Times of journalists when we got him, gave him the bump.
Not that we did much for him, but it's funny to think about almost 9 years ago, and how when we first started covering McKay Coppins, he was writing for the Daily Universe, and now he writes for the Atlantic.
Yep.
We've watched his whole career unfold.
We knew it.
Like a tender parent.
Kevin Barney. Peggy Fletcher Stack,
the coward,
all these great characters in our world.
All these people that don't want to have anything to do with us. but we love them
people.
All. We love them all. We love everyone. We're very blessed. We're very blessed to do this whole thing and have even 10 of you care. It's great.
Many smiles, many blessings.
Well, anything else you want to bring before the body?
That's it, man. Happy 400th, Jeff. Well done.
Thank you. Incidentally, I sat through my first Elders Quorum under the new structure of like how they do lessons now.
Yeah.
I was not impressed. That's all I have to say about that for now. It could have been better.
It's going to take a while.
I'm excited for the new structure of church coming up next year. It'll be fun to do that. Anyway. Anyway, folks.
Hey, people, send us emails. Contact at thisweekinmormons.com or like us on Facebook and Twitter.
And Instagram, where someone left a thing on my door the other day that said there's breakfast with the Lord. That's the kind of stuff that we post on Instagram. Like, they're saying, come to breakfast with the Lord. Why would you not go to this? I basically know when
the bacon doesn't get you there, Jesus should.
I basically know when the second coming is, Al. It's this Saturday at 7:30 a.m. at the clubhouse. That's when it's starting. Boom. Anyway.
At the clubhouse.
Like Al said, everybody, follow us on all those various places. And we interact. We're good about responding. So say hi to us and we'll say hi back. It'll be fun. Thanks for sticking around. Tune in next week. We should have another show. It might be a doozy if all works out according to plan. That's all I'll say about that for now. Anyway.
All right, see
you. You make all things possible, Al. For Jeff. For Al, I'm Jeff. Be well, be holy, and be happy. Twim is out.